Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Remember back on New Year's Eve when you made all those fabulous resolutions? You solemnly vowed that 2016 was going to be different. The new year held so much promise. You were finally going to take off those pounds and get back in shape. You would speak up at work, volunteer for new enriching assignments, and convince the boss that you were ready for a promotion. You'd finally make more time for your spouse, your family, and close friends, and you'd also volunteer in your community, and you'd also take time for yourself to pursue those hobbies and recreational activities that you cherish. Well, guess what? It's almost the end of April, and how many of your New Year's resolutions have you accomplished? And how many do you even continue to work on? I'll bet if you're like me, by March 1st, heck, maybe even earlier, you'd already sadly acknowledge nothing has changed. And here's a more basic question for you. Do you ever let the feeling that you are, get that feeling that you are falling short of your potential, that you could be living life in a greater and grander way? So what's your excuse for not initiating positive change? I'm simply too busy to get in shape, make time for my family, or volunteer in my community, or I'll be attacking my resolutions when I have more time and the money to work on them, maybe next year. And you know, neither excuse is helpful if you are serious about wanting better results and improving the quality of life for yourself and for others. But here's some good news. Today's guest, Joan Pussevy, is here to tell you that no matter how often in the past we have failed to keep them, this year we can rescue our resolutions, and we don't need to wait until January 1st, 2017. Wouldn't it be great if you could recharge, refocus, and get excited about reaffirming and accomplishing your goals any time of the year? And Joan assures us that you and I can be getting the life of our dreams. We simply need to be shown how, and she's here to challenge you to see within yourself an abundance of what she calls positive possibility, along with the motivation and confidence to express that possibility. And on her website, Joan tells us that making this a reality for everyone has become her personal mission. So why not get started today? And Joan Pussevy, at age 19, was introduced to a set of teachings that positively altered the course of her life. She bought her first house later that year and became a branch manager of a bank at age 22, at the time the youngest person in Canada ever to do so. A few years later, she quit her job and began spreading her message to others. And over the past 25 years, she's lived, fine-tuned, tested, and tweaked her inspirational ideas and shares them in seminars and keynote speeches in countries around the globe. She's founder of Global Youth Project, Inc., with a mission to inspire young adults to positive beliefs and action. And she's best-selling author of the book, The Way Success Works, How to Decide, Believe, and Begin to Live Your Best Life. And although her primary focus is on young adults, I'm certainly her message will make a world of sense to us middle-aged folks like you and me as well. And hello, Joan, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy, and thank you so much for a fabulous introduction and opening.
Well, as men and women of middle age, a lot of us are pretty set in our ways. At age, say, 43 or 56, is it too late for us to positively transform our lives, to begin living in a greater and grander way, as the intro or the foreword to your book talks about?
It's the perfect time, Roy, regardless of where we find ourselves in that lifetime spectrum.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's good to know. So I'm not necessarily over the hill or still possible.
No, and it And it starts with deciding what it is that we want. You know, too often it's so easy to get caught up in earning a living and our day-to-day habit patterns that we seldom take the time to really step back and consciously design our life, which we can do, any aspect of it. And I believe that now is definitely the time.
Well, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, particularly in this day and age. I mean, never before in the history of civilization have you and I had the opportunity, the ability, with just the swipe of a screen or a click of a mouse, to reach out and connect with people around the globe to share ideas, collaborate, brainstorm, ideally solve problems, and help us get where we're going.
Yeah, the problem is at middle age, a lot of us have failed so many times at keeping our resolutions or at really changing things in our lives. We've become cynics. We've been vowing to change year after year, but keep falling back to old attitudes and habits. What can we do to break this mental logjam?
We need to stop living from the outside in and live from the inside out. And what I mean by that is because we see, there's a very good reason why we keep seeing these same patterns in our life month after month, year after year, decade after decade. It's typically what a person will do is they'll take a look at their existing results, their happiness, their health, their physical or material wealth, the money in the bank account, their fitness level, their relationships, whatever it is. And that's what fills their consciousness during the day. You know, they may get an idea of something they really like to have, do, or be, but they say, well, you know, I can't because I don't have the money, or, you know, I'm in this rotten relationship, whatever. That's
the old if only, or, you know, blame circumstances.
Yeah, but the problem with that is, they're feeding that into their mind, into their subconscious body, which is driving, into their subconscious mind, which is driving their behavior, their actions, creating more of the results, and it's this vicious cycle.
Yes. Well, you offer three simple but powerful tips on how to go from just dreaming to really doing. And what are the three tips that you talk about?
Well, first and foremost, and I'll get back to stopping that. Let's start with stopping that cycle, since that's where I left off. So what we'll do, and this is the common error, is take a look at our results. That's what we keep thinking about, and that's what we're creating more of our same. We need to stop doing that. We need to acknowledge, yes, these are my present circumstances, but we got to realize that that's just a reflection of our thinking and decisions up until now. Yeah. We can absolutely say, you know what? Now we are going to make a change. 2016 really is going to be different, and there's still time. So how do we do that? We tap into one of our higher faculties known as the imagination and build an idea of something we'd really like to do. Maybe it is rekindling something that we really wanted back in our youth.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm finding a lot of my readers our age, readers of The Way Success Works, that's what it's triggering. Oh, yeah, I remember it. I really wanted to do this. I was passionate about it. But for whatever reason, you know, family, career, they've set it aside. Well, now's the time to pick up that dream again and brush it off. And hold that picture of what it is that you want to be, not the way things are.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you can just really visualize how you'll feel when you have that new attitude or whatever you're seeking, it really makes a difference, I think, so you can really visualize
excellent point. And that's part of fertilizing and nurturing that seed. Let me give you a quick analogy. If I took an orange seed and planted it in fertile ground and we cared for it and nurtured it, over time, we would expect to see a beautiful orange tree. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, but not a pine tree or a cherry tree or an apple tree, only an orange tree.
Yeah.
But the interesting part is if we took that orange seed and dissected it and looked at it through a highly powered microscope using the latest and greatest technology, we would never, ever find a little orange tree in there. Because it doesn't exist. You could say the orange tree is in the universe, but what it does contain is a pattern, plan, or a nucleus that dictates what it's growing into. When you decide what it is that you want to have, whether it's that, you know, that perfect weight, and you got to articulate what that is, or that healthy relationship, and you got to articulate what's that going to look like, when you decide on that, that's like choosing the seed, like choosing the orange seed. And then, just as what you said a moment ago, you see yourself already doing it, loving it, you're really feeling it, that's nurturing it, that's planting that seed. But here's the key, Roy. we know on an intellectual level, when we plant that seed, there's a whole lot of growth happening down below. There's a lot happening that we don't see with our eyes. But our understanding tells us it's starting to grow. And too often we give up on our goals too quickly. We don't see right away with our physical senses that it's happening, and we go, oh, it's not going to work. And meanwhile, we've just changed pictures. We've planted a new seed.
Yeah. Yeah, the wrong kind of seed.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're doing it all the time, but we need to take conscious control and get it to work for us.
The seed for weeds, which grow up in our lives and choke the orange tree.
Yes, and that is an analogy, actually, that I use in the way success works, that we, in the same ground, we could plant, like, basil, that beautiful herb, or we could plant poison ivy. They're both going to grow fabulously, particularly the one that we give energy to. The universe doesn't care what you're going after. It'll help you along the way. The problem is we keep changing the darn picture.
Yeah. So at middle age, a lot of us feel like we're stuck on neutral, far short of our dreams, of our youth and our potential. Our everyday less than optimal choices, what are they guided by? I think you mentioned our paradigm, and what is the paradigm, and how is that holding us back?
Our paradigm runs our body, runs our results, runs our life. We are conditioned two ways. One is genetically. The genetics, of course, is, you know, ends up being our culture that we were born into, the language we speak. That's why we look like our parents and our family.
Yeah.
However, we're also conditioned by our environment, our parents, siblings, media, you know, all those influences around us. And we grow up with these ideas, some of them positive, unfortunately, and a lot of negative. You know, what do you want that for? You know, what makes you think you deserve that? Or you're not good enough, you're too old, you're too young.
Not good enough. That's unconsciously so many parents not meaning to hold their children back and plant the idea that you're not really good enough to, become a famous artist or an athlete or whatever. You just have to settle with basically what we have or what you are born into.
That's right, yeah. And in my case, I was born with very introverted tendencies, and I was raised by a very, very loving but shy, stay-in-the-background kind of mom, and it was very difficult for me to meet and greet people. In fact, I couldn't, and it's that paradigm, it's that subconscious conditioning that controls our behavior, and so although on a conscious level I can think, oh, wow, it would be so wonderful to be able to, you know, meet and greet people and talk to them and the experiences I could have, this would be wonderful, but my butt stayed put because on an emotional level, on that level of where the paradigm resides, I was scared, I was fearful, and until I changed those ideas in my mind, I wasn't going to get the new results, and that's where the work takes place. And the beginning of it is what you mentioned.
That's the key question, is how do we alter that paradigm? Where do we start to, change that from what we don't want to be and what our subconscious beliefs or whatever is holding us back? Yes. How do we start working on that paradigm to change it?
Yes, because we've been, you know, like decades now, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, whatever the negative limitation is. There's two ways that we learn, Roy. One is through impact. When something really impactful happens and we change right away, it doesn't have to be, but it's often negative. The other way is repetition. When we do something over and over again, like driving your car now. If you think back the first time you learned how to drive, if you were anything like me, you're all over the place. But now you've done it so many times on a conscious level, you don't even think about it. You come up to a red light, you don't have to stop and think, oh, it's a red light, I got to put my foot on the brake. You just do it automatically. You've literally programmed your body. So we need to reprogram. And the way we do that is through just the way we learned, space-timed repetition. So you physically write out, I am, like in my case, with overcoming these introverted tendencies and shyness, I am so happy and grateful now that I'm meeting people confidently anytime, anywhere, any place.
Yeah.
Notice that all those words are positive. There's no negative. It would have been incorrect for me to say I'm not shy. But rather, what's the reverse of that? Confident.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, because if you keep saying, I'm not shy, then that little voice comes up and says, yes, you are.
Yeah, you are. Plus, you can't think of a reverse of an idea. Like, you know, if I said to you, don't think of a pink elephant, you know, the ones with the big pink ears, don't think of those. You can't not think of it. So make sure it's all positive. And keep in mind, again, we've been telling ourselves these things for a long time, so it's not going to happen overnight. But this is part of the mindful mornings that I refer to in my book, or empowered evenings. These are some of the things that you do, and it doesn't have to take long, but it does have to be done every day. It's like brushing your teeth. You don't just do it once and go, okay, I'm done with that for the week or the month. You do it every morning. Same thing with this. We've got to take conscious control.
You have a section in your book, The Way Success Works, where you discuss the two most destructive emotions. What are these destructive emotions, and how can we counter them?
Well, yes, two most destructive emotions are resentment and guilt. They're very closely aligned. Resentment is about something that I think someone else did.
Yeah.
To me, guilt is something that I think I did wrong.
Yeah, and both of them are so destructive because, you know, resenting what somebody did in the past is not going to get you anywhere, obviously. And feeling guilty about something you did in the past really isn't going to solve anything going forward, unless, of course, you may somehow compensate for it or make amends to the person that you feel guilty toward. I guess that would help somewhat if you're sincere about it. But,
yeah, and I think the important part is there that you're sincere, and their reaction to your, you know, apology or discussion about it, that's beyond your control.
Yeah,
so don't make
this
contingent.
That,
yeah, so they may or may not forgive you. That's totally not your thing. But realize that whether it's a guilt or a resentment that you keep replaying in your mind, you're the one that's the recipient of that negative energy.
Yeah, I think I mentioned somewhere in my book, forgiveness benefits three people. One, yourself, which is probably the most important. Second, the person that you probably harmed. But third, others that are around you that constantly have to listen to you talk about how you resent someone else.
That's an excellent point, Roy. Excellent point. And feeling guilty about it, too. We got to recognize, or feeling guilt, we need to recognize that whatever it is that we did or said that we feel guilty about, we acted, we behaved at the level of awareness that we were at.
Yeah,
but since that time, we've grown. And ideally, we would handle that situation differently. So rather than beat ourselves up, how about we celebrate our growth?
Yeah, that's so important that a mistake you now consider a mistake that you made in the past, you can look at it positively two ways. One, you can say, well, I did the best that I could, given the knowledge and the person I was back at the time. So if it was the wrong decision, you can say, I've grown since then, and I wouldn't make the same kind of mistake again. Or you can be satisfied if it turned out to be the right decision, so you're a winner either way.
Yeah, absolutely. And as far as the resentment, I mean, that applies for that other person, too. I mean, they dealt with the situation how they did.
That's
beyond your control.
Yeah.
And again, if we're in that resentment mode, we don't get better, we get bitter. And it just eats us up, and we're the one that's sucking in that negativity. Someone once said that holding a resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. It doesn't work that way.
That's an excellent way to put it. Well, in your book's introduction, you reveal at age 19 you were able to seriously let go of all the reasons why you couldn't do something and instead focus on all the ways you could. And I love that. That's a wonderful formula for life renewal and success. But how did you do that? I mean, what caused that transformation in thinking?
One was the realization that I could. See, up until that time, what happened was the shy, introverted me was talked into going to this evening presentation that I was told was going to be on business matters, predominantly marketing. I think I was told that so that I'd go. Well, I get there, and it turns out the speaker is not talking about marketing. I sat there captivated for 2 hours because it turned out he was talking about the mind and how each one of us have deep reservoirs of talent and ability. And he was saying, regardless of what you think your limitations are, regardless of what's happened to you in your past, you can really do anything with your life. And I'm like, wow, seriously, like even me. But up until that time, I had only studied traditional school subjects, science, history, math. Nobody had talked to me about my mind and potential before.
Yeah,
I thought
such
that
a
when
failing
you were born,
in the schools, the education system,
yes,
never really talks, yes, about that.
But we're trying to change that. But
yeah.
I thought you were born, up until that time, I mean, I know better now, but up until that time, I thought when you were born, you were dealt certain cards from the big deck, so to speak, and those are the ones that you had to play. Well, that's fine if you and I were dealt a great hand, but what if we weren't?
Yeah.
You know, often we're not. But I realized as I started...
If only my parents had taught me better, you know, if I only wasn't I'm not very smart and I'm not physically attractive, if only I wasn't born into poverty, you know, we were dealt these cards, and it's so easy to blame those cards. And but you say that you don't have to stick with those cards, that you can throw them back and pick new ones.
Oh, you keep making all these wonderful points, Roy, and they trigger ideas in my mind. When I was talking about my mom being shy as well, and that's where I get that from,
yeah.
I want to make sure that people aren't hearing me. That is no way, shape, or form the blame game.
No.
If we blame a person, again, for how we were raised, we don't get better. But what that was a realization of, oh, okay, I can see where a lot of that conditioning took place. Because imagine mom and I, you know, I'm this, like, really small child, and we have to walk into a room full of strangers. I mean, she was feeling a lot of fear, and of course I was picking that up. But you see, a person can't give you something they don't have. My mom could not give me the feeling of feeling comfortable in front of a large group if she didn't possess that. That makes sense,
no,
right?
No, that's very true.
Yeah. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. And
yeah,
you're
so now, then it was up to me to change it if I wanted to.
Yeah. No, that's when you take the responsibility and say, I'm CEO of me, and I don't have to keep these same old cards that I'm not satisfied with. I can seek out new ones. That makes a vast difference in your life if you can do that. But in your book,
in
you tell a fascinating story of Thailand's Golden Buddha. Tell us that story. And for so many of us, why are we like the Golden Buddha? I love that analogy you made there.
Well, I first heard about the Golden Buddha from another speaker, Jack Canfield, the Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I immediately wrote it down as a goal. I thought, I got to see this Buddha that he's talking about. And it's always fun when you write down goals, but you don't know how they're going to show up. And there's another, well, actually a mentor of mine, Bob Proctor, who's well-known in our industry. He was doing a seminar over in Malaysia, invited me over to teach with him, so I did. Anyway, there was someone in the audience there from Bangkok, from where this statue resided. One thing led to another, and I found myself in Bangkok about a week after the seminar that I was doing in Malaysia took place. And it's incredible. It's just under 10 feet tall. It's about 5.5 tons. It's all gold. And it's about $250 million, they figure, value, and roughly 7 centuries old. But here's the reason why you and I love the idea of this Buddha. A long time ago, when facing the threat of invasion by Burmese soldiers, people that were looking after the statue, well, and they couldn't exactly pick it up and hide it somewhere. So they did the next best thing. They covered it in plaster, and they covered it with, they inlaid little bits of glass, and it looks quite pretty, but certainly its true worth was hidden.
Yeah.
And it remained hidden for literally, excuse me, centuries.
Mm.
The legend of, or the mystery, I suppose, of what was under there was totally forgotten about until, get this, 1955, until the statue was being moved from its location. They affixed these great straps around it because of its weight. Remember, it's 5.5 tons, but when they went to pick it up, one of the straps broke, the statue falls, a corner of this plaster's chipped, and one of the workers say, whoa, and they immediately stopped the move, and they started to remove the plaster, and this beautiful Buddha was revealed.
Oh, wow.
And, and of course, you know, I hope people see the moral here, the very same awe that I felt standing in front of this statue, and I'm thinking, you know, how could this have been hidden for so long? This is, like, magnificent. But, you know,
Middle Age have been hiding our true selves for a long time,
a lot of us. That Golden Buddha is within each one of us. But almost immediately when we're born, we begin to collect these layers of negative conditionings and feelings of lack and inadequacy and all sorts of limiting beliefs. And these pile up over time and really shroud the brightness that is our true way of being.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people sadly never recognize that that's even within them.
Yeah, that's the sad part, that some people go to their graves that I could have been, or, they never really take the time to really explore and discover what's within that, the wonderful talent and resources that every one of us has, and our ability to contribute to the world far more than probably what we're contributing now.
Absolutely.
Many of us are aware of the law of attraction as revealed in The Secret, you know, that universally acclaimed book, or that whole series of videos. We set a goal, try to visualize success and its benefits, and believe positive results will follow. But why do so many of us try out the law of attraction yet fail to accomplish our goals? What stands in the way of success? I think you touched on it earlier. I guess we tend to just give up too soon, or...
Well, I think you touched on it, actually, when you brought up the paradigm. That's what's holding us back. It's our old conditioning. On a conscious level, we can say, okay, we want the, you know, beautiful waterfront property or the dream vacation or the new car, whatever it is. But then we've got to act on that as well. I don't know about you, Roy, but I've never been in prayer or meditation and suddenly a bag of money has fallen on my lap.
No.
Now, it doesn't work that way. It's
well,
like,
if you bought the lottery ticket, maybe that would fall in your life.
When you take that orange seed, whatever it is for you, and plant it and care for it and nurture it, yes, instantly and automatically, just like that orange seed, there's energy and particles and things being attracted to it, but at the same time, we've got to be moving towards it. And when you get that feeling to do something, to pick up the phone, to talk to somebody, sign up for a course or whatever it is, that's the law of attraction at work. But then we've got to take action on that, even if it's uncomfortable. So back in my more shy, introverted days, using the law of attraction, if something inside tells me, you need to go up and talk to that person, but I'm like, oh, no, I discount it, then now I'm attracting something different because I've changed the picture.
Yeah, I love how you talk about intellectually understanding a concept and totally integrating it into our lives. That's an excellent example, you know, thinking about, you know, I should go up and talk to this individual, and actually doing it are two very different things. And I love in your book how you talk about the three steps, and I know your book's organized where you decide on your destiny and set your intention in mind, believe you can manifest your heart's desire, but then you have to begin your first steps. And that's what so many of us fail to do. And then we just sort of go through frustration in our lives because we don't take that first step.
But like you said, it's so rewarding once we do. But understand, it is a huge thing to take that first step. I mean, we've got a terrific example out of NASA where they explain that a rocket traveling from the surface of the Earth to Earth orbit is one of the most energy-intensive steps of going anywhere. That first step, get this, requires half the total energy needed to go to the surface of Mars.
In other words,
it takes the same amount of fuel, seriously, to get from Earth to Earth's atmosphere, which is 250 miles, than it does to get from that point to the next 140 million miles to Mars. It's a tremendous amount of power to break away from that gravitational pull. Similarly for you and I, there's a tremendous pull there to break the old habit patterns. I've noticed for years that my weight had been going up. And it was around kind of that New Year's resolution time. I was thinking, you know what? I really got to do something about this weight and that. And it dawned on me. Now, look at what time of the year we are. And I'm thinking, Joan, you haven't done anything about it. Do you know why? Because you didn't do what you said in the book. Number one, you got to decide. You thought about it. You thought how wonderful it would be, but you never decided, okay? So then decide.
Yeah.
And then I got out an old picture of me at my preferred weight and made up a chart with the weight that I wanted to. I had to create a solid visual. So I'm halfway to my goal now.
Yeah, that's great.
It wasn't until I actually decided. It's a huge difference.
Your book, you talk about a vision board that I guess is somewhat what you're talking about there, something that keeps you constantly aware of your progress and what you're actually doing to to meet those goals.
Regardless of outside circumstances, in other words, regardless of my weight, I've got to keep the picture of the preferred result. And that's one of the ways is through what we call a vision board.
I think your result is probably opposite of what I did, and I'm doing the wrong thing, that we put a picture of a big fat woman on the refrigerator. But that's sort of the negative side of it, which you tell us not to do.
Absolutely. No, we want to focus on what we want, what we don't want. Not what we don't want. You know what I mean.
Well, let's talk briefly about your book, The Way Success Works. How is that book organized? I guess it contains a whole lot of stories of mostly young people, but people who have accomplished wonderful things in life and their stories. But also you have a lot of advice for us. How is that book organized?
There's three components to The Way Success Works. It's a blend of all three kind of happening at once. There's the template of how The Way Success Works. This is what you do. Here's the steps.
Yeah.
The second part is it also is infused with examples of how I made it work in my life. You've mentioned a couple about buying the house and being the youngest manager, bank manager, et cetera, things like that. And then also examples of success stories of youth. And when I say youth, they're generally in their 20s, although some of their stories started earlier, from around the world. And what I love about, I fell in love with all these youth. They're amazing. But they're no different than anyone else. They've just decided to do something. And that's what I love about this today's younger generation, is many of them are saying whereas you and I might have seen something that wasn't right in the past, we just sort of might accept, well, that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
but I see a number of youth in this generation saying, hey, wait a minute, there's something I can do about this. And so, I've seen examples of that. Like there's one gentleman in India in his mid-20s, he's out there solving that country's blood shortage problem. There's the other, somebody that came to mind, Fraser, when you were talking about the reasons why we don't do things like, I'm too young, too old, not enough money, whatever. This boy, at the age of 13, learned how to make jam in his grandmother's kitchen. He got so excited, he ran back home, robbed his piggy bank of the equivalent of about $3, went to the store, bought his first bag of oranges and sugar, made a batch of jam, jarred it, ran out, sold it door to door practically before it was even cooled. By the age of 16, he quit school with his parents' blessing to do this full time because he was doing so well at it. He's in his mid-20s now. He's in 12 countries and over 2,000 stores.
I love orange marmalade.
Super jam, it's called. And he never borrowed a dime, Roy. Number one, he was too young, and his parents couldn't fund it. So when somebody says to me, well, I'd love to do such and such, but I can't because I don't have enough money, it's like you don't need the money, number one, until you make the decision. Number two, there's all sorts of other ways. But if in our mind we believe we've got to have the money in the bank in order to go ahead, then it's never going to happen.
Yeah, there's always an excuse why we can't do it. But isn't it wonderful when we really decide on what we want? And so often the ideas come to your mind when you have that positive outlook and a definite target in mind. So often creativity, we tap in, I guess, to the universal intelligence or whatever. I don't know where it comes from, but so often the ideas will come to your mind once you unclog and get that paradigm out of the way that we were talking about. Well, where should people go to obtain your book, to preview and purchase it?
Okay. The best way is the website of the same title, which is thewaysuccessworks.com.
Oh, I see.
Thewaysuccessworks.com. And actually, if they're purchasing it now, there's some free gifts there, too.
Oh, great. And you also have another website for your organization. What's that website? Because I know you have a lot of good resources on there.
GlobalYouthProject.org.
Yeah,
GlobalYouthProject.org, O-R-G. And, including a free audio tape program called No Limit Confidence, which is the best of No Limit Confidence, which is based on a program that I did years ago. And then basically I pulled the best of it recently and put it together with this book in mind. And that
you
is
old, free to your guys listeners. And gals out there, don't be frightened off by that globalyouthproject.org title because it does have a lot of stuff that's good for us older folks, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in my mid-50s. I'm 55 in July, so I'm right in there.
Yeah, so that message, it's also, I think it's great. It would be a great gift for our young adult sons or daughters, mm-hmm. daughter-in-laws or whatever, because it's so important. I know I tell how I basically went to sleep for 30 years when I was in my early 20s, and I got caught up in career and all these other mundane things that I wasn't really all enthused with what I was doing, and it took me until about 2000 to really wake up to the potential that was out there and what I should be doing. But in conclusion, regardless of age, country you live in, or cultural differences, we're all connected to the same source, call it God or universal intelligence, whatever. On the other hand, each one of us has completely unique gifts that we can bring to the world, as Joan points out, and no one else can make the contribution you can, regardless of your age and past history. The world needs you, so get ready to amaze yourself and your corner of the world, and Joan Fosterby's book and her resources can help launch your journey of discovery. And thanks so much, Joan, and best of success in spreading your wonderful message.
Thank you very much, Roy. It was a pleasure being with you today.
And it's up to us not only to discover our talents, but also to inspire our children and young adults. And let's all go out and tackle those resolutions. We don't need to wait till New Year's. In fact, spring is a great time to work on those resolutions starting right now. And thank you so much, Joan Fosterby, for being with us today. Our guest, Joan Fosterby, has given us great advice on rescuing our resolutions, no matter how old they are or how many times we've failed to keep them. But before I go, here's one question. Are your mind and spirit prepared to launch the new improved version of you? We're not talking here about some total stranger. All you need to do is combine the useful zest for living that you had in your 20s and 30s, and who says you can't have it again today, with a mature judgment gained through 20-plus years that you have gained through adult living. That's a sure-fired winning connection. We've talked about them on prior programs, but once again, I encourage you to make yourself 4 promises if you haven't already. Promise number 1, I no longer will dwell upon past mistakes. Promise number 2, I hereby appoint myself as CEO of me. Last week we talked about captain of your own ship, which is the same difference. Whatever it is, no one is better qualified or has more skin in the game than you, so why not take charge of your own life? Promise number 3, moving forward, I will seek out and concentrate upon positive aspects of today and will spread goodwill to those around me. You know, it's so catching. If you're positive toward your outlook, you'll help spread that goodwill to others. And promise number 4, starting now, I hereby ban all worry and negative thinking for at least 60 minutes each day. Start with 60 minutes and work your way slowly but surely up to 23 hours. If you must worry, why not limit yourself to just 1 hour of worry a day? That 1 hour is enough to get all your worries and fears out of the way so you can enjoy the rest of your day. And your next step is to fill the void left by discarded negative thinking with heartfelt images of a positive, goal-oriented future, just on your own terms. Visualize in as much detail and passion as you can the wonderful experience you will live as a renewed person, a positive person with complete confidence in the future. Absolutely refuse to sell yourself short. Positive visualization is a wonderful tool, and if you genuinely believe in your heart and soul that life's second half will be joyful and productive, it will. And no one can force you to dread today and tomorrow. Of course, you may not be able to fully determine outside circumstances, the health of a loved one, your own health for that matter, but you can condition the mind and emotions to anticipate and make the best of it, whatever your individual circumstances. And don't neglect to make a spiritual connection with a higher power because God wants you and I to succeed. I'm totally convinced of that. and we're here to help you recapture the blessings of middle age and beyond. Visit our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. Preview my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. You can find that on Amazon or on our website. And if you'd like, send me an email, roy@middleagerenewal.com. I'd love to hear from you, and especially love to hear if your circumstances have improved greatly by using some of the promises we've talked about here today. And that's it for this week. And we'll talk to you again next week on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.